Ladies and gentlemen,
I take great pride in presenting
the world radio.
Paris.
Paris.
Paris, France.
C'est Paris.
Hello and welcome to World Radio Paris Presents. I'm your host Yannick Champion-Ousselin, and today we're going to be talking to Anne-Sophie Samper, author and activist, about her new book, Police Partout, Justice Nulle Part. So that translates to Police Everywhere, Justice Nowhere. This is a book about police brutality, but more specifically about the consequences of police brutality and how justice is fought for within the legal system here in France. The book came out in early September 2023 and is published by Massot Editions. So far, the book is only in French, but perhaps one day we'll see an English translation. If you speak no French, you can listen to the interview here and understand a bit about its contents and what Anne-Sophie's mission is with this text. Welcome, Anne-Sophie. Thanks for being here.
Hello. Thank you for having me here.
So it seems from your book that since 2015, police violence has grown in France. What has happened since then?
It has increased since 2015 in the context of protests. But police brutality in France generally has always existed, and specifically targeting young Black and Arab men in poorer area, but also migrants. So there was always a problem of police brutality in France. What we've seen since 2015 that can be related maybe in the context of the state of emergency after the terrorist attack of 2015, where demonstrations and protests were seen as a threat and were more repressed. And we've seen that notably early 2016, where you had a lot of protests against a new labor law. And we've seen there that you had several people who lost their eye, who were mutilated during protests. It was unusual before, but it has increased since then. And you may remember at the period of the Yellow Vest, where you had dozens of people who were mutilated, who lost their hand or an eye in the context of protest. But we have to keep in mind that police brutality didn't start there and has been something ongoing in certain suburbs of France. And that's something that needed to be addressed. That's why I wrote this book, which is not exactly about police brutality. It's more about how the legal system, the judicial system, is addressed the question of police brutality. In June 2023, for example, you had the death of Nael, a young man, a young Arab man from a suburban area, and he was killed when he was driving his car. And there was a very high number of people being killed in this kind of situation in France, but at the time it was filmed, it created a lot of emotion and riots. And the answer of the decision makers, politicians, and so on were, okay, the case is in the hand of the legal system, of judges, and so you should trust them and something is going to happen and justice is going to be made. But the truth is that when you look at cases of police brutality, you have very few convictions and even less condemnation of police officers, even though you have many cases where it's kind of obvious that the use of force was illegal. So there is something that is not working. And the problem is that when you see an image, a very shocking image of someone being shot at by the police or someone being beaten in a protest, there is a kind of public anger. But why it doesn't work within the legal system is something that is very hidden, because it takes a long time. It's behind closed doors and in the office of the judge during investigation. So no one really sees it. And that's what I wanted to show and explain, and show that in the end there is very little justice for the victim of police brutality in France.
So yes, because of course, with this justice system, France has actually been told off by international authorities for the length of time it takes for general legal procedures, but in particular they've had multiple reprimands on how they handle police brutality cases. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
For example, since 2017, France has been condemned by the European Court on Human Rights 5 times about cases of police brutalities. And in one case, they were not condemned, but they preferred to pay a compensation to the family because it was kind of obvious that there was a violation of human rights. And generally during all the review of human rights record in France, by be it the Committee Against Torture our UN Human Rights Committee. There is always a case about police brutality, about justice and police brutality, the lack of transparency of procedures, the length of procedure. Generally, justice in France, it takes a while. It's really long. It can be explained because we have a problem of resources. We don't have enough judges. We don't have enough capacity, resources, investigators. And that works for any kind of case. But the problem is with police brutality is that on top of that, there is no political will to prosecute police officers. And on the contrary, I mean, anytime you have a case of police brutality, you have a kind of public communication from the authorities trying to defend the police. And in the end, the debate is about are you pro or against police, not about is this police officer used force legally or not. Polarized a lot the debate and prevent any kind of discussion about what is a legal use of force and how to make sure a victim access justice. And for this book, I was trying to see if there was any kind of instruction from the Ministry of Justice about how to investigate police brutality cases. I found one mention in one instruction in 2016, and it's very light. And in comparison, the Ministry of Justice is constantly publishing instructions about how you should prosecute protesters anytime they commit any kind of degradation. There is a political will to go after certain types of crimes, but definitely not police brutality.
Multiple times in the book, you get the sensation that the victims of these crimes feel attacked for trying to seek justice, that they're entering this legal system that seems to have stacked everything against them, and that even in cases where the use of force seems ridiculous, you know, there are stories in the book where it's people taking home their shopping and they just pass a protest and they get hit and, you know, injured in a life-changing fashion, and yet still when they seek justice they get talked about and, you know, by the press and by the justice system as, yeah, almost troublemakers. Why do you think this is, or what can you say about it?
Yeah, that's something that was really shocking to me, because I've conducted dozens of interviews with victims of police brutality, and it appeared very clearly that beside the injuries you suffer as a victim of violence, you also suffer very much for the fact you have to prove you're a victim. And indeed, as soon as you start to complain, there is a kind of war on communication where the police is going to present you, is going to try to show that you were a troublemaker, or that when you were young you were smoking pot or whatever. Try to find anything in your records to show that you were not the perfect victim. On the other hand, of course, they're going to depict the police as being under a lot of pressure and being in protest. They are in a chaotic environment, which is true. I mean, it's very difficult to be a police officer these days, but it doesn't excuse an illegal use of force. So for the victims, I mean, at every level of the investigation, they feel like they're treated as guilty. And one explanation you have to keep in mind is that the police is closely linked to the legal system, the justice. I mean, they are the first step towards justice. They're writing all the reports that the judges need for the investigation. They're the one investigating. So they're part of the system. And of course, it's very difficult for a system to accuse one of its members. And I remember I was talking to a former prosecutor, and he told me, for example, once he had the case of a police officer was accused of police brutality, but this police officer was also his investigator on a drug case. So there is a conflict of interest to start to go after him when you also need him for something else. And that's why what I was trying to show at every step, you have this conflict of interest, this lack of political interest in prosecuting that type of crime, and this media environment where the victims will be presented as guilty or not as innocent as it should be.
You talk very clearly about how the people conducting the research and finding the evidence for these cases are often the colleagues of those being accused. And then you also talk about an independent body that does exist but is very underfunded. Are there initiatives to get more funding and to kind of create a more robust independent system to keep the police in check?
And the question of independent investigation is it's coming back every time in front, every time you have a scandal. And it's very shocking when you look, for example, at what's happening in the UK, where you have the IOPC, which is much more independent. In France, it's really police officer investigating on other police officers. So, of course, you have a bias. And sometimes you have an announcement that it's going to be made more independent or that the investigation are going to be sent to the Défenseur des Droits, which is a more independent body. If often in cases of police brutality in France, what happens is that you have a lot of announcement, political announcement, but then nothing is done. I mean, and I don't feel that there is any kind of political will to really change the situation. And I'm going to spoil a bit the end of the book, but that the reflection I have in the end is that if you had a functioning legal system going after a police officer anytime they use the force illegally, that would mean that a lot of police officers may be convicted, and then probably the institution, the police as an institution, would start to rebel and question why you have so many cases, because of course you have police officers that are crazy and not respecting the rules, and that's statistically normal. But the fact that you have so many cases of killings and injuries and a problem with the use of force in France, it comes from political choices in terms of policing. It's a government that chose to give to police officers weapons that are able to mutilate people. The government that decided to send unit for policing protests without them being trained. It's also the government that has this policy of check and controls in the suburbs that often leads to police brutality and have like literally no effect on security. If the police was actually held accountable for the result of this kind of policies, then they would question the policies, and that would probably need to a full reform of the police, which is something that the government doesn't want.
We've also seen that France's police force has access to weapons that its European counterparts don't have access to. So this is obviously a government decision to allow this to happen. How do you think this came about?
I mean, in terms of why France is the only country using explosive grenades to police a protest or doing that massive use of rubber bullets to police a protest, I don't know. I don't know if the manufacturers were trying to sell their weapons. But it's very surprising, because any time you say that these weapons should not be used for crowd controls, immediately be it the government or the police say it's impossible to do otherwise. And when you look at other European countries, they don't use them. And they would claim that protest has never been that violent in France, which is completely false. I mean, if you look at what happened in May 68, it was much more brutal than the protest today. And if you look at other protests in Europe, I mean, they can be pretty harsh as well. There is no rational reasons to keep this kind of weapons, and it's extremely dangerous. I think it's also problematic for the police, because I don't think you should not be entering the police with the will to mutilate people, but in the end that's what's going to happen. It's impossible to use rubber bullets in crowd control management without taking that kind of risk. But again, that's a debate that is very polarized, and anytime you call for a suspension or a prohibition of these weapons, you hit a wall, and it's impossible to discuss.
In the protests after Niall's death, there was another incident, l'affaire Eddy, and after that, and you know, this young man, I think 22-year-old, was hit in the head by a rubber ball grenade and ended up having to have a part of his skull amputated. And then police officers went on sick leave to protest this. Are there forces within the police that are questioning this, or is it a institutional-wide issue?
It's always very difficult to discuss with police officers, because the problem is that the unions that hold the majority within the police are quite radical and would oppose any kind of change. You have some progressive unions, but they're a minority. Then obviously the police officers who are talking to me, knowing what I do, are more progressive. And obviously within the police, you have police officers who have concerns about the evolution of their job. I mean, they didn't enter the police to do that kind of policing. And generally the police was... many reforms undermine the way they were doing their jobs, be it in terms of training and capacity and resources and the result they were asked to have. So you have critical voices inside the police. The problem is that it's difficult to be heard. This polarization of the debate leads to a situation where the police is also defending themselves because they feel like everyone hates them. And you have this slogan in protest, "Tout le monde déteste la police," everyone hates police. And so then there is this distance and they want to protect themselves because they feel that they are being accused of everything. And ultimately, my concern is that police officers who enter the police with kind of an ideal of what they wanted to do, like protect the population or investigate serious crime, they end up feeling that they can't do it properly and that this institution is too brutal for them. And I know a lot of them are trying to leave, and I have a strong concern about who is going to stay.
Those who are left behind, who don't quit out of protest, might then reinforce this kind of negative culture of disproportionate violence against civilians. And I found interesting the parallel between both the injured, those who have been, attacked by police violence, and the police officers. Both use the term omerta, like this silence, almost mafia-like silence that comes when they are witness to something that either in civilian life, people don't understand how traumatic it is to be injured in this way, and then, or, in places where it's common, how traumatic it is when everyone wants to brush it off. And then in the police, you have this silence because of the solidarity that you're supposed to have with your colleagues. Did you notice that parallel?
Not until you did, but it's true that you feel very isolated. I mean, you even experience that no one experienced when you experience police brutality. Even though I also talked to psychologists to explore the impact of police brutality, and specifically in the cases of protest, he was very clear that the person who suffers injuries is being traumatized, but also everyone around, and that also a problem with the police brutality in the context of demonstrations is that it creates some kind of fear. And I know in France many people don't dare to go to protest anymore or would not go with their children because they've witnessed violence and they're being a bit traumatized as well for that. In terms of the police, there is a lot of solidarity. It's impossible to talk against your colleagues. And I explained some cases where some police officers were shocked with what was happening in the police station and tried to speak out. But you immediately have sanctions, but like even administrative sanctions because of default of loyalty. And that's a problem with the culture of the institution, where loyalty is more important than legal use of force. I mean, you have more risk to be sanctioned for default of loyalties than for illegal use of force. And there is a culture of tolerance through violence. And even like some of the progressive police officers I was talking to, they wouldn't see a problem with a few slaps in the police station when they arrest someone, even though it's completely illegal. Of course, it's not like a mutilation, but it also creates some kind of acceptance, and police can be brutal. That can be seen as a response to the fact that, police are always exposed to violence, but obviously it's not a way to go. I mean, they have to do policing differently, and it's very complicated and it's difficult, and that's something that governments absolutely don't want to try to do. Also, because the government is using the police to address social issues when they want to push for a reform of the pension system that everyone is against. There is no social discussion. There are protests, and the police is here to try to contain the protest. And it's the same with what's happening in the suburban area. I mean, you have a problem of unemployment, of access to education, of urbanization, transportation, and so on. So it would require a lot of social policies. But instead of addressing these long-term issues, you would send the police and try to keep these areas under control.
Say that there's a systemic issue not only in the police, but also we're leaving the systemic issues in place because there are other systemic issues that we're not treating. And then rather than going to the source of many societal issues, we're using the police almost as a band-aid in France to continue to deal with this in a way that is maybe easier for the government, would you say?
Short-termist. But I think it's in the long term, it's a very bad decision. But unfortunately, I fear that in France, a lot of the decision makers are led by short-term electoral necessities, also by communication. I believe that the development of media hasn't helped. The fact that you have running news all the time about violence and security, and you have a specific angle in the news in France. I mean, it's more difficult to have a reportage about the situation in the suburbs in terms of access to transport and jobs. And it's not sensationalist. Whereas when you have a case of an aggression, or that would be something that that does better on TV. And so you have this focus, and politicians are responding to this focus. Besides, you also have political interest. I mean, if you're talking about the environment, all time on TV, of course, political parties that are recognized as being better to protect the environment would be more appealing. If you talk about security or immigration all the time on television, political parties that are seen as better to address this issue would gain some votes.
Going back to protests and just people's fear when it comes to these protests, where can people find information that will keep them safe, not only when they go to protests, but also afterwards should they be victims of police brutality during them?
You have several organizations that publish leaflets about your rights in protest. So, for example, La Ligue des Droits de l'Homme, Human Rights League, has published several leaflets on that. I think also the Syndicat des Avocats de France, Unions of Lawyers in France. You also have a number of lawyers that make themselves available should you be arrested in a protest. In my book, I explain what you have to do if you're being injured, how you should complain. It's always better to be accompanied by a lawyer. You have different style of lawyers, so choose wisely someone that would you feel comfortable with, because it's going to be a long process, so you will need to spend time with your lawyer. Yeah, and you have a number of organizations monitoring that. Not enough, I would say, but you can. Yeah, Ligue des Droits de l'Homme is a good one to get advice.
The book at certain points reads like a how-to guide to help you. Unfortunate enough to live through these circumstances, is there anything the public can do to support people that are currently undergoing these processes?
Yeah, absolutely. And I should add, actually, that if you're a victim of police brutality, specifically in a protest, but not only, you have a number of collective of victims that work as solidarity movement, and you can reach out to. So they would help you, notably with all the administrative procedure you have to go through. So, for example, you have one that is called Les Mutilés pour l'Exemple. But also a network that is called Vérité et Justice. So all this kind of collective would help you and provide support. And since there are people that have themselves been victims of police brutality, they know exactly what you're going through. And as a general public, first of all, you can donate to this collective. There is one chapter of my book about the cost of being a victim of police brutality, and it's extremely expensive, because not only you have to pay for justice, I mean, your lawyers and different fees, but also you have a lot of health costs for your healthcare, and not everything is being covered by insurances or social security. So I found many people who are struggling with that, also because sometimes when you're being injured, you won't be able to work, or you will have to quit your studies. It can be life-changing. So often they are fundraising online, for one person or for the organization, and they're not asking for money as a luxury. They really absolutely need it. So if you see this kind of fundraising call, do not hesitate to contribute. Then there is another thing, if you're really committed, go to the trial. There are very few trials, because as I explained in my book, it's very rare that it reaches the stage of a trial. But generally, the police is very present, and it's very difficult for the victim to see half of the room being filled with supporters of the one who injured you. Way before that, if you go to a protest or if you witness any kind of problematic behavior of the police in the street, do film the police. Take images is extremely important because in the legal system, the police is seen as always telling the truth, and the judges would trust the police, which is kind of normal. I mean, they work together on a daily basis, and generally when the police report about a robbery, the judge would trust them. But when they're the one being accused, it's more problematic. And so the only way to get an objective evidence is to have images. So do not hesitate to film the police. It's completely legal. Then you share the images with the victim, because the person would need it for a case if the person who is being injured, as you say.
And also, we've seen with your book that the media attention around a case is also very important in the speed and the attention given to it by the justice system. So should people interact on social media with stories and like share them about when they see things, when people talking about their own experiences?
Yeah, it can be useful. I'm very torn about this situation of media, because I think obviously it plays a role. It definitely plays a role in how a case is going to be treated, even though it's not enough. We've seen cases that attracted a lot of media attention, when Cédric Chouviat, the delivery man who was killed in January, I think it was January 2020 in France, or also Michel Zecler, who is a music producer, and he was heavily beaten by the police at the end of 2020. And these cases attracted a lot of media attention, and yet there is still no trial. So if the victim decide to expose his or her case, yes, of course, you should support that. Where I'm torn is that often, I mean, it's difficult for a victim to expose themselves. And also, it can reinforce some kind of prejudice. Because obviously, if you're young student in medicine from a wealthy family and you've been injured, you will look better on television than if you're poor, unemployed, and at one time in your life you used to deal drugs, even though it wasn't legal to beat you or to shoot at you. So it creates a kind of bias. But let's say that if the victim goes with that, you can support that, because it would change the case.
Okay, thank you very much. Do you have like one last sentence, one last bit of advice to give our audience, or otherwise we can like leave it there and just...
I would say keep going to protest. First of all, it's not as bad as social media would let you think. And also, it's very important to defend your rights. I can think about the mobilization, the global security bill a few years ago, where it was proposed to ban filming the police, which would have been a huge problem. And because there were a lot of protests, we managed to block it. And now you're still allowed to film the police. So keep going to protests and don't listen to your fear.
Okay, there we have it. Don't be too scared and go to protest. Thank you very much for your time, and this has been World Radio Paris.